The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined today by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. Well, James, we've just come from Prime Minister's questions this afternoon. How did it go between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer?
I think it was Keir Starmer's most effective parliamentary performance in some time. He not only picked the right topic, which was nurses' pay, where the government obviously have a vulnerability, but he also asked short, pithy questions. At PMQs, Boris Johnson's often rather like a just-a-minute contestant. If he can find any link to talk about something else other than what Keir Starmer has asked him, he will go for it. Keir Starmer kept his questions short enough this time round that Boris Johnson couldn't turn the conversation to other topics in the way that he normally does at PMQs, and I thought that was good. I also thought Starmer was sensible. He only had one joke in this session, and the point is, humour, sadly, just does not work in this empty social distance chamber. There just aren't enough people for it, and so the jokes fall flat, even if they're good jokes. This time around, he only had one joke, which was sensible, and he kind of kept coming back to this point about the 1% pay rise for nurses. I think, look, Labour are in a difficult political place at the moment. Government are comfortably ahead in the polls. I think from Starmer's point of view, he will be quite happy to ride this issue of nurses' pay between now and the elections in May. The government will continue to kind of hide behind the defence, well, look, the independent pay review body is going to look at this, but it just still allows Labour to keep attacking the government. And I think one of the difficulties with the government is that, you know, all the things that you could say to defend the decision to offer a 1% pay rise are difficult things for them to get right. You had James Bethel trying to talk about their relative job security yesterday, and it didn't quite come out right. And it's not exactly great for the Prime Minister to stand up and say, well, we might be about to have mass job losses in the private sector. So people, you know, and that's not something he wants to be saying. So I thought Keir Starmer got it right today. I also thought it was a day of concision, actually, because in PMQs, because Ian Blackford, the SNP leader, power cut meant that the SNP deputy leader had to step in for him. And it was noticeable how much faster PMQs moved.
Katie, where do you think this pay row is going to go next? You've written on Coffee House about some of the options that the government has. How are Conservative MPs feeling about it generally? Keir Starmer listed a few descriptions from some backbench about what was going on. Do you think they are representative of the feeling more widely in the party?
I think there's definitely unease about where this row is going, but I don't think it is seen as being where free school meals was yet. But I think the fear is it could become very similar to the free school meals row, where you expend a lot of political capital on something the government eventually has to move on anyway. I think there is a division in terms of opinion on this. For example, Mark Harper on Sunday night on the Westminster Hour was defending the 1% pay rise and making the case that we've seen a few commentators make that actually it's more than it seems. Think about these various factors and there is a defence of it. But I think you are also seeing MPs start to think, what can we do now to soften this row, to take the political salience out of the issue? And I think that the general sense is that I get is that people do think the government will have to move on this a bit. And the government themselves, although ministers have been out defending the 1% pay rise, I think government aides are very keen to stress that no decision has been taken yet. It's taken in May when the independent body makes its own recommendation. So I think they're even suggesting, you know, it wouldn't be, for example, you're hearing, it wouldn't be a U-turn if it wasn't 1%, because we haven't actually said it's definitely 1%. Now, some would disagree on that, but I think the fact those arguments are made suggests that this isn't closed. But I think in terms of where this goes, there are two ideas that I think are gaining the most traction amongst the parliamentary party. One is the idea of, yes, perhaps a above 1% pay rise for the whole of the NHS staff is too much, but could you have it targeted in terms of the lower earners? I think that what you hear from that is that it would be very techy and quite difficult to do potentially, but that's one thing MPs are asking about. And then the second is, if you look at the devolved administrations, I think Scotland have done this, it was a one-off payment to the NHS staff to thank them for their work. And I think that where that seems like it could have some appeal is that it would be a temporary one-off payment, a little bit like what the Chancellor Exeter wanted to do on universal credit with this one-off payment rather than extending the uplift. Didn't work out for him then, but I think the sense is it could be more well-suited to what you want here. So it would be a one-off payment to say thank you for all your work during the pandemic, and that would tick some boxes. So I think there is a sense that one of those things is seen as likely to happen, and the fact that Labour are on such comfortable ground here and we're not getting the recommendation all the way until May suggests that this is going to grow as an issue that the opposition want to attack on.
James, we saw the recycling of an old line of Prime Minister's questions today, which was "he vacillates, we vaccinate," from Boris Johnson directed at Keir Starmer. How are things going with vaccinations?
So, I mean, there's meant to be a big uptick in UK supply of vaccines, which is coming because we've had quite a while where the vaccination numbers haven't been as impressive as they have been in the past. I mean, everyone is waiting for this increase in supply. But there is also currently yet another UK-EU vaccine row after Charles Michel, the president of the European Council, accused the UK of having an export ban in place on vaccines, which essentially isn't right. When Charles Michel's team was asked about this, they said they got the information from the Commission. The Commission said, no, we don't have that information. It didn't come from us. And I mean, what it essentially refers to is the fact that the UK signed a contract with AstraZeneca that meant the UK had to be serviced first, but that's not the same, obviously, as an export ban. I thought it was a very interesting report in Australia, which is you know that the Italians and the EU blocked the export of AstraZeneca vaccine to Australia, and the Australian government have now told Sky News Australia that the UK government have helped them to source alternative supplies of the AstraZeneca vaccine, and I mean that gives you a sense of some of the diplomacy around vaccines. There's a fascinating development today, which is that Joe Biden is holding a conference call with the Quad allies. So that's the US, Japan, India, and Australia. Now, this is a makeshift alliance that is being widely seen as part of a kind of attempt to kind of contain China. They will be discussing today using that alliance to distribute vaccine in Southeast Asia. I mean, that is another reminder of how vaccine diplomacy is in full flow right now. And I think it's also worth noting a report on the Times website this lunchtime that Italy is going to produce the Sputnik, the Russian vaccine, with the aim of distributing that in Europe. So I think you can see lots of movements in this whole great game of vaccine diplomacy at the moment.
Katie, the newest member of the cabinet, Lord Frost, has been answering some questions in the House of Lords this afternoon on the Northern Ireland Protocol. Just update us on what's going on there.
Yes, so David Frost took over responsibility for the Northern Ireland Protocol and general relations with the EU last week. Michael Gove was previously looking after the Northern Ireland Protocol. And although everyone's very keen to stress that everyone's getting on tremendously well and there's no differences of opinion whatsoever, there does appear to be a stylistic change at the very least between what David Frost wants to do and how to go about it and what Michael Gove did. I think Michael Gove's approach to several things is often summed up as attract more flies of honey than vinegar. But I think David Frost is perhaps seen as being more on the vinegar end of the spectrum. So if you look at the Sunday Telegraph piece he wrote about the Northern Ireland Protocol, one of the first things David Frost did last week was unilaterally extend the grace period on goods crossing the Irish sea border. This upset Brussels because they said that, you know, we have not agreed to this. This breaches what we've agreed. There's talk of legal action. And I think that on the Brussels side, they say it soured the mood. The op-ed in the Sunday Telegraph was not a particularly soothing piece. Instead, it was summed up by the Telegraph. So this wasn't David Frost's exact words, but the paper that ran it summed up as almost, you know, stop sulking and get on with helping us make Brexit Britain be a success. Now, I think that if you look at supporters of David Frost, they will say that this approach work during the Brexit negotiations, and actually you have to talk tough with Brussels. But I think on the other side, and I think this is just the view from Brussels, I think there are some on the UK government side who think this, there is a question over, does a op-ed like that mean that you bounce the EU into moving, or does it actually make it harder for EU to walk down from where they are to say, oh, we've both come to a mutual understanding? And I think that it obviously remains to be seen, but I think the risk of the David Frost approach is that it could get to a point where actually the EU feel as though they have to make a point on things because they don't want to look as though they are losing face, and they're already feeling obviously rather sensitive about their vaccination programme compared to the UK's.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.